So we are going to begin from today. Every day we will begin around this time. We will have slideshows. We will also have time for question answers at the end of each day. So whatever questions you have, you may note them down. Ask them at the end when we will leave time for such questions. And in case the questions strike you next day, you can also ask him at the end of the next day. Preferably, however, do not delay more than a day for your questions. However, if the question is very pressing, you can ask after 3 days, 4 days, or whenever else.
Seven days.
We are going to talk on these various subjects. Actually, the subject is very vast. It is very difficult to cover some of these subjects in 7 days only, in just 2 hours every day. Nevertheless, since this is just an introduction, we will try to be very, very brief about these things. How many of you are attending this course for the first time? Most of you. How many have attended any programs at all in this temple? Very few. So please go along with us on this very, very wonderful journey. So in this, we begin our session by talking on the subject of what exactly the Bhagavad Gita is. All of us have heard of Bhagavad Gita. So many lectures take place everywhere. So many camps, so many yoga retreats are organized to teach us Bhagavad Gita. What exactly is this Bhagavad Gita? The Bhagavad Gita is, a historical conversation that took place between Lord Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield. It is a historical event. Normally people imagine that Bhagavad Gita is a mythological thing. This is mythology. One time I remember in a bookshop, in the section on mythology, there were many of the Puranas and such books. And I asked the shopkeeper, why do you place these things in the mythology section? It is not mythology. Mythology means something that is fictional, that is not true, that is not historical. But the Bhagavad Gita is not something mythological. It is an actual historical dialogue that has taken place. It is part of a whole history of many, many extraordinary events that happened. Can all of you see these slides from behind? At the back, can you all see? And by the way, we will be circulating very exhaustive notes to all of you. So now you may be able to write down because there is some light from the outside. But as it becomes darker, you will not be able to see your notebooks. But don't worry, we will be giving you very exhaustive notes, which you can study in the house. And by the way, for those of you who would really like to go deep in the subject, we have kept a wonderful option for you. Once all the notes are with you for the 7 days, then at a certain pre-decided time and date, we will be having some exam for you, for those of you who wish to appear for it. It is voluntary. And those of you who appear for it and pass it, you will get a certificate for this course. And then in future we will be having such advanced courses also. A series of such certificates can be awarded. This is for those who will be more serious to go deeper in the spiritual subjects. So, the background for the Bhagavad Gita lies in the Mahabharata, as you know. The Kauravas had committed injustice against the Pandavas. With a game of dice, they had expelled them from the kingdom. They were exiled into the forest for long years. The Kauravas had always been inimical to the Pandavas. The Pandavas had been very virtuous by nature. They had many good qualities. But the Kauravas were always jealous of the Pandavas. And right from childhood, they had tried to harm the Pandavas in many ways. Finally, they succeeded in exiling them. Lord Krishna himself, as we can see here, he came as a messenger of peace, Shanti Dut. He also tried to persuade King Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan and others. But somehow, Duryodhan and others would not listen. And therefore, a battle was inevitable. A most extraordinary battle took place. It was a world war, in front of which the world wars of the modern times look very small, insignificant. Armies from all over the world had gathered here in Kurukshetra. The very Bhagavad Gita begins with this verse, Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyutsavaha Mamakaha Pandavas Chaiva Kim Akurvata Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra is making this inquiry from Sanjay, his secretary, that my sons and the sons of Pandu have gathered here on this Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. What did they do, my dear Sanjaya? It is natural when the two armies gather together on a battlefield, they are gathering together for a battle. But it is significant that the battle took place in a Dharma Kshetra. Kurukshetra had a very ancient history of many, many spiritual activities there. For the last so many thousands and thousands of years, many great rishis and sages had come there to perform their tapasya, their austerities, their spiritual practices. Many great yajnas had been performed there. In this way, the place was considered very, very holy. It was in this place that eventually, at this setting, Arjuna found himself unable to face the prospect of killing his own relatives. And he thought that better to give up the kingdom than to kill my own relatives, especially my elders, who were like my gurus, my fathers, my grandfathers, like Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and many others like that. So Arjuna could not tolerate the thought that he had to kill. So then finally he spoke to Arjuna, to Krishna, and said that I cannot do this, my dear Krishna. I will not fight. And it was in this background that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to him. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna urges Arjuna to fight. But if it was simply a matter of one sentence of urging Arjuna to fight, it would have been over in 2 minutes. All Krishna had to tell Arjuna was, Arjuna, please fight. Matter was over. But no, he wanted to explain why Arjuna should fight. He wanted to explain in what consciousness or state of mind Arjuna should fight. And in this way, through Arjuna, Krishna wanted to give us all in humanity for many, many thousands of years to come, many great lessons. The Bhagavad Gita is a book that is a one in a million. It is a timeless book of such great wisdom as has not been seen in the modern world, and all the other scriptures of the world pale into insignificance in front of the lofty wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita occupies certain chapters in one section of the Mahabharata called the Bhishma Parva. It was compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was the person, the great sage, a literary incarnation of Lord, who compiled all the Vedas, all the Puranas, the Upanishads, indeed all the Vedic Shastras have been compiled by him. And since he compiled the Mahabharata, and the Bhagavad Gita is a part of that, we should be very grateful to Srila Vyasadeva for having made available this most wonderful, extraordinary, enlightening conversation that took place. It is interesting to note that Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue. Geet, song. It is called song because it is spoken with such beauty, with such poetry. It is written in verse form. It was spoken in verse form. Sanskrit is a very sweet language, a very poetic language, a very cultured, refined language. And here was the greatest conversation of all time taking place. Many times people think that religious matters, spiritual matters like Bhagavad Gita and so on, it is blind faith. We simply accept everything that is said just because it is being said. Andhashraddha. But actually that is not so. If you see, the Bhagavad Gita is simply a conversation. Arjuna is asking questions, Lord Krishna is giving answers. When Arjuna is unable to understand the answers, he is asking for further clarifications and he asks even newer questions. In this way, a wonderful series of questions and answers is taking place in this great dialogue. It is not that Lord Krishna is simply going on one monologue, one speech. Arjuna, you must do this, 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 this and this. No. All the Vedic scriptures, the Upanishads, the Puranas, are all in dialogue form. They are asked by certain qualified people and they are answered by even more qualified people, great sages and sometimes the Lord Himself. So this is the background in which we can try to understand the Bhagavad Gita. We have seen, we have had a glimpse now of what the Bhagavad Gita actually is. So having seen that, let us now try to understand what is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. Did Lord Krishna speak the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna simply because he wanted Arjuna to fight? Or was there anything deeper? What was the thing that is deeper there that is significant to us? It was spoken 5,000 years ago. So the question may arise in our mind, 5,000 years ago is a long time in history. Now the Bhagavad Gita has become old-fashioned. It was meant for people who lived at that time. But now we are living in an age of rockets, of computers, of hung houses in the parliament. And this is our modern situation. So is the Bhagavad Gita going to be relevant to us? Indeed, it is relevant to us, very much so. Because the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita goes far beyond just one battle. So what is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita? First and most important, the Bhagavad Gita is meant to save humanity from ignorance. It is meant to give knowledge to the people of this world. We see that everyone in this world is suffering. Everyone is unhappy. Everyone is confused. Just like Arjuna was. In Arjuna's case, it may have been very extreme. Can you imagine? If you were in a position where you were asked to kill your own relatives in a battle, it was your duty, your dharma to kill your near and dear ones in the family, what would you feel? What kind of difficulty and dilemma would you be in? Arjuna was in this difficulty. Arjuna was not a coward. He was a very brave warrior. He was very expert. He was so expert that the Kauravas were thinking that perhaps he was enough alone to defeat the whole army of the Kauravas. So why did Arjuna become reduced to this plight? You can see here in this picture. Arjuna is holding his head in his hands. He is confused. He is lamenting.
Oh Govinda, oh Krishna, I cannot fight. This is too much for me. It is unbearable, intolerable. I cannot do this sin of killing my elders in the name of Dharma. And Krishna is trying to pacify him. And he will be explaining the Bhagavad Gita knowledge to him. So in life, we are all placed into many, many difficult, confusing situations. We try to solve our problems with solutions that we concoct in our life. But in the Shastras, it is explained that whatever material solutions that we concoct to solve our problems, they themselves become further problems. For example, we have a problem of transportation. We want to go from one place to another place, and if we are to walk, then it may take very long. So man has invented the motor car. Surely the motor car has solved many problems of transportation. What would normally have taken 2 days to walk, now we can do in a matter of minutes. But at the same time, the motor car has thrown up a host of problems. Car accidents, so many deaths, petrol, pollution, dozens and dozens of other problems. In this way, the whole human world, the human society, is becoming more and more entangled in the solution-problem cycle. We have a problem, we try to solve that problem by creating some solutions, but those solutions in turn become even more deadly problems. Then we try to solve those problems with more solutions, which in turn become even greater problems. In this way, the world is in a state of total confusion. Nobody is clear what to do. This is because there is no clear knowledge. Perfect knowledge does not exist here. There is ignorance. So the first and most important reason for the Bhagavad Gita being spoken is that Lord Krishna wanted to give true knowledge, perfect knowledge, real knowledge to the people of this world. The second knowledge, the second purpose for the Bhagavad Gita is, it is meant to help us to revive our lost relationship with God. We will see more of this in the coming days in our journey of self-discovery. But very briefly I will mention here that all of us, whatever be our caste, creed, community, religion, nationality, in fact, not just the human beings, but all living beings, we have an eternal relationship with God. Unfortunately, we have forgotten this relationship. Much like a son who has left the father and who has gone independently to live on his own, he forgets the father, but the father does not forget him. And because he has forgotten his rich father, he is suffering there, outside, struggling. The father is very rich. If the son had stayed with the father, then it would have been so nice. All facilities would have been available. Both father and son would have been happy. But now the son has left because of his rebellious nature. He doesn't want to serve God. He doesn't want to love God and to obey his instructions. In the same way, we are all part and parcel of God. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamai vansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanah manah shasthanindriyani prakriti sthani karshati. That we are all tiny fragmental parts and parcels of Lord Krishna, but because we have forgotten Him, we have forgotten our eternal relationship with Him, so we are here in this world struggling against the stringent laws of nature. So the Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Lord Krishna to remind us that you are eternal part and parcel of God. You are not independent of God. God exists. You are also eternal. God is also eternal. You have an eternal relationship with each other of love. So to give us that knowledge and understanding, to give us the method by which we can revive this lost relationship, lost from our side, not God's side. This message of Bhagavad Gita has been spoken here. So then the next question should arise, why should we try to understand the Bhagavad Gita? What is the significance? What is wrong if we do not understand our relationship with God? I am quite happy where I am. Is there really any need for me to understand the Bhagavad Gita? I have my family. I have my business which is doing quite well. I am respected in the society. Everything is going fine. So what is the need for me to spend my time trying to understand Bhagavad Gita? Man is a thoughtful person. The difference between man and animal is that man can question things which an animal cannot question. Now we see that many things are being imposed upon us which we do not like. For example, all of us have experience of falling sick. And during illness, you all know it may be very miserable. We are totally unhappy when we are sick. It can be quite painful also. Or if someone has an accident, or if a near and dear one in our family dies, how painful it is. We all want to remain young, energetic, but sometimes we see we fall sick, we lose our energy. Ultimately, old age comes. We do not want to grow old. Everyone wants to remain young. So there are certain things in life, in nature, that are being forced upon us, which give us suffering, which give us unhappiness. You look around at the world, read the newspapers, everywhere you will see problems, problems, problems. Suffering is everywhere. Somewhere some earthquakes and volcanoes and floods and cyclones are killing people. Sometimes there are terrorist attacks on people and many are dying. Sometimes there are wars between different communities, different nations. So many types of suffering is going on in this world. So the intelligent human being, he asks this question, why am I suffering? Why is there so much suffering in this world? Till such time as a human being tries to inquire into his own suffering position, he is not called a human being. Therefore it is said, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. The Vedanta Sutra begins with this statement, that now that you have got this human body, inquire, make inquiries. Unfortunately, people are only asking questions, how to make more money, how to enjoy, what is the cricket score? Only these kind of questions are being asked in the society. But how many people are asking the question, how can I attain real happiness? Why is death being forced upon me when I don't want it? Why is old age, disease coming upon me? Why is there so much suffering in this world? What is the solution to this suffering once and for all? This kind of question has to be asked. And that is why the human form of life is very special. That the human being is a thinking animal. The animals, other animals and birds can only think about certain basic needs of life. Therefore, it is explained that human beings, they have these four common activities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Everyone likes to eat good food. Nowadays, so many hotels, restaurants, so many different kinds of delicious foods are available. Everyone also likes to sleep a lot. This is natural. Everyone is involved in some mating activities for procreation. Finally, there is defense. We have our properties, we have our wealth, our home, our families, our nation. We want to defend it. So human beings, ordinarily speaking, are engaging in these four activities. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the animals are also doing the same thing. The animals are also eating,
sleeping, mating, defending. All these four activities are common to human beings and animals. Therefore, in the Hitopadesha, it is explained, Ahara Nidra Bhayamaitunam Cha Samanyametat Pashubhi Naranam Dharmo Hitesham Adhiko Vishesho Dharmena Hina Pashubhi Samanah. It is said that Ahara Nidra Bhayamaituna, eating, sleeping, defending and mating, are four activities that are common to human beings as well as animals. Pashubhi Naranam Samanyam, equal. Both humans and animals do this. But there is one difference, a very, very important difference between the human beings and the animals. And that is, Dharmo Hitesham Adhiko Vishesho. That one special quality that the human being has, which the animals do not have, is that the human being can follow dharma. He can follow religion. He can understand spiritual knowledge like the Bhagavad Gita, which the animals cannot. And therefore, dharmena hina pashubhi samanaha. If a human being does not take interest in acquiring spiritual knowledge, if a human being does not try to understand who is God, who is the soul, why is there suffering in this world? What is the solution to all these sufferings? What is real happiness? So long as a human being does not ask these questions, he is simply an animal. A polished, sophisticated animal. In the Shastra, it is explained as being Dvipada Pashu, a two-legged animal. Do you see this very wonderful picture here? What does it show? It is a funny picture. It shows one man in the middle, and around there is a person wearing a suit and a tie, but if you look at his face, you will see, what is it? It is the face of an animal, a dog. In other words, what this picture indicates is, if a person is not spiritually inclined, he is no better than an animal. We should not think that somebody becomes a very cultured and refined human being because he wears a suit and tie, or because he travels in a big car, or because he eats in 5-star hotels, or he sleeps in air-conditioned comfort, or because he travels in jet airplanes and uses computers. No, that is not the standard of culture and civilization in human society. The standard of civilization is that human beings must try to understand God. They must try to understand spiritual knowledge and live like real human beings. Otherwise, they are simply two-legged animals, sophisticated, polished animals. Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, used to say that the dog is running on four legs. The human being is running on four wheels, that means a car. So what is the difference? Simply because a human being is traveling in a sophisticated way, in a big car, it doesn't necessarily make him any more advanced than the dog on the street who is running on his four legs. Why are the two not different? Because the purpose for which the human being is traveling in his car is also simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending, which is the same purpose for which the dog is running here and there. Of course, not that we have anything against cars, but the point is not about the car. The point is about the consciousness of the human being. If the human being does not pay attention to his spiritual pursuits in life, then however wealthy, well-known, famous, etc. he may be, he is still considered to be an animal. He is not considered a human being. So therefore, having understood that this world is a place of suffering, an intelligent human being tries to probe deeper. What is the nature of suffering in this world? In the Shastras it is explained that there are three kinds of miseries, as you can see here. One is called Adhyatmika Klesh. Klesh means suffering or misery. The second is called Adhibhautika Klesh. And the third is called Adhi Daivika Klesha. Adhyatmika klesh means miseries caused by our own body and mind. For example, hunger, thirst, tension, diseases within our body, and so on. They give us a lot of trouble. Nowadays, especially in the modern times, stress, tension, anxiety is one of the biggest problems in the world, is it not? Everyone is complaining of tension and stress in life. This is a typical example of an adhyatmika klesha. It is, of course, no doubt prompted by situations around us, but ultimately we create our own stress, we create our own tensions. Then there is adhibhautika klesha, miseries caused by other living entities. In this world, nobody can live peacefully for long. There is always someone who is going to come to give you difficulty in life. Even if you think that I will isolate myself from the rest of the world, still suddenly you may get a notice from the income tax department through the postal service. So something or the other will always happen. Even if you isolate yourself from human beings, the mosquitoes will give you problems. The rats will give you problems. The germs will give you problems. All living entities are busy giving trouble to each other in this world. Because in this world, everyone lives at the expense of others. And we are seeing how much suffering is being caused to people because of other living entities. Examine in your own life. Your customer may be giving you so many difficulties. Your boss may be giving you so many difficulties. Your small children who do not listen to you may be giving you difficulties. Perhaps your grown-up children may be giving you difficulties. In this way, other living entities cause many problems to us. And finally, there is adhidaivika klesha. Daiva. Daiva means destiny, or that which is available in nature through the agencies of those who manage the affairs of the universe. By adhidaivika klesha is meant all kinds of natural disasters like cyclones, typhoons, earthquakes, volcanoes, too much heat, too much rain, too much cold, and such things. So, this suffering is all pervasive. Everyone in this world, all species of life, in human beings, whether one is rich or poor, whether one is famous or not, whether one is powerful or not, everyone is suffering. This is a basic fact that the Bhagavad Gita stresses again and again. Lord Krishna emphasizes that this material world is Dukkhalayam. The school is called Vidyalaya. It is an abode of Vidya or knowledge. The Himalaya is the abode of Him or snow. So similarly, this material world is an abode of Dukkha. There is only Dukkha here, nothing else but Dukkha. Anyone who wants to be really happy in life must first understand with great faith and great conviction this one very simple statement, that this material world is a place of suffering. No one can be happy here. So long as these three kinds of sufferings are there, so long as birth, death, old age and disease are there, there can be no suffering at all. There is, I beg your pardon, no happiness at all. Unfortunately, however, people become very much illusioned by the razzle-dazzle, the chamak-dhamak of the outside world. And by all this show outside, everyone is creating this whole drama. Everyone is suffering, but nobody wants to admit that they are suffering. So everybody wants to create a make-believe world where they want to hide their suffering, where they want to believe that they are not suffering. They want to live in a world of illusion. And so powerful is the razzle-dazzle of this world that even very, very intelligent people who are endeavoring on the spiritual path will often get distracted. The television now is such a great distraction from spiritual pursuits. So much razzle-dazzle, glitter and glamour, the cinema, the world of sports, the world of politics, the world of money and business, the world of enjoyment and pleasures, the world of cars and computers. The whole world is being conducted in such a way that we start thinking
because of this illusion that yes, everything looks so attractive, but this is a great illusion, and therefore we think, yes, I am having a great time, just see, everything is going so well, I am on the beach, I am enjoying life, everything is so well, everything looks very nice.
But we do not understand that basically there is no happiness here. Therefore, the second purpose of why we need to understand this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is to make a permanent solution to the sufferings of this world. This is a very, very important point. So having understood this, two points. Why should one understand Bhagavad Gita? One, because the human form of life is very special. Human form of life is meant to understand divine subject matters. Therefore, we should understand. And second point is that the world is a place of suffering, and by understanding the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, we will become enabled to become totally free, permanently free, eventually, from all this suffering. So then the next question arises, that all right, I accept that we should understand Bhagavad Gita, but how should I understand it? I do not know. What is the method? What is the mentality I should have? What is the process by which I should try to understand the Bhagavad Gita? The first thing that is required, the first condition that is to be fulfilled if we want to understand the Bhagavad Gita properly, is that we must accept it to be a historical event. We should not think it is mythology. At least start with this assumption that Bhagavad Gita is not some fancy fairy tale. It is reality. It is history. The second point, there you see a nice interesting thing. One person is twisting and turning something and trying to crack it and break it. So, do not twist and turn the meanings of the Bhagavad Gita to suit your own purpose. In other words, we should accept Bhagavad Gita as it is. We should not try to give interpretations to the Bhagavad Gita. The founder Acharya of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, used to emphasize this point very much. And he would say that people in this world, they give interpretations to Bhagavad Gita. And many people out of ignorance think that the more original or unique somebody's interpretation is, the more attractive it is. That may be all right just to attract people. But Srila Prabhupada said, truth or real knowledge is not a matter of interpretation. Real knowledge is simply a matter of accepting the knowledge as it is. Therefore, the edition of the Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada translated and commented upon, he titled it as Bhagavad Gita as it is. Not as I think it is, or not as I think it should be, but as it is. We should not twist the meaning. When Lord Krishna uses the word mam, me, in the Bhagavad Gita, we take it as me. So in other words, whatever the Bhagavad Gita says, we accept as it is. This is the second condition that we need to do, follow, if we want to understand the Bhagavad Gita properly. The third condition is that the Bhagavad Gita means song of God. That means God is speaking. And who has spoken to Arjuna? Krishna. So it is already declared that it is a song of God and Krishna is speaking. So therefore we should accept Lord Krishna as God. At least theoretically to begin with, even if we do not have faith in the beginning, at least theoretically in the beginning we should accept that Lord Krishna is God. Time and time again in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is about to speak, we find the words Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. In Sanskrit, this means that Bhagavan spoke or Bhagavan is speaking. So many, many times Lord Krishna is referred to as God. The very title of this book also indicates that Lord Krishna is God. So at least theoretically, if not with faith, we should accept that Lord Krishna is God. The next question is that the Bhagavad Gita should be understood in a spirit of bhakti, in a spirit of devotion, in a spirit of love. And it is best understood, therefore, in the company of great devotees. Of course, in the modern day and age, we cannot have this kind of situation where you see in this picture here, such a wonderful situation, right in the middle of the forest, such a serene atmosphere. Here are great sages gathered together with great devotion, trying to understand spiritual subject matters. So also we should sit in the association and company of devotees of the Lord, of bhaktas, and in a mood of devotion, we should try to understand. If there is no devotion, we will not be able to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Just like if there is some honey, and the bee is trying to lick the outside of the bottle of the honey, do you think the bee will be able to taste any honey there? What is the way the bee will have to understand? The bee has to go first to the jar and open it. And when the honey is taken from inside the jar, then the bee can actually taste the honey. In this way, the Bhagavad Gita can be understood really only by the devotees of the Lord and by nobody else. If one tries to understand the Bhagavad Gita without a devotional spirit, then one will not get any happiness from it. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, this is a path of susukham kartum avyayam. As you understand the Bhagavad Gita and practice it, you will feel happiness. But there are many people who may be reading Bhagavad Gita, but they are not understanding or they don't feel any happiness. Why is that? Probably they are not approaching in the right spirit. They are not being guided properly. Because they are not approaching the Bhagavad Gita from a point of view of bhakti, therefore that happiness is missing. See, it is a very simple point. Arjuna is a great devotee or a bhakta of Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna declares to Arjuna, Sa evayam maya tedya yoga proktah puratanah bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hetat uttamam. Lord Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, I am giving you this knowledge which was lost. Normally it comes in a parampara of guru and shishya, the disciplic succession. But this knowledge was lost some time ago. I am reviving this knowledge. I am giving you this knowledge again. Why am I choosing you for that, Arjuna? I am choosing you because you are my bhakta. Bhaktaha asi me. You are my devotee. Sakha cha iti. Because you are my friend also. Because you are my devotee and my friend, I am explaining this uttam rahasya, this topmost secret to you. Therefore, you are the qualified candidate to understand it. So this way one should understand it in a mood of great devotion. So fine, we will say yes. Now this is the spirit in which one should understand. But who is a real candidate for understanding? Who can understand the Bhagavad Gita? In other words, are the qualifications of a real disciple? Many times, people are more eager to understand or know what a guru is. What are the qualifications of a guru? How does one understand who is a real guru? These are of course very, very important questions which we must try to understand. Nevertheless, before we come to the question of who is a guru, we should understand first who is a disciple. Then we can think in terms of who is a guru. Everything in life needs an adhikar. Adhikar means some kind of qualification. For example, even to be a student in a medical college requires some adhikar. We have to get a certain number of marks, we have to pass certain examinations, we have to be willing to pay certain amount of fees. So many qualifications are required if one wants to be a student in a medical college or to do so many other things in life. So a disciple is nothing but a student. So if there are qualifications required for studying other subject matters in this world, is it not natural and logical that there should also be some qualifications if one wants to be a student of spiritual knowledge? Of course, fortunately, in spiritual knowledge one doesn't require money, as we do in the medical colleges. one doesn't require marks, but still there are other qualifications that are required for a disciple. So if one really wants to understand spiritual knowledge well, then one must ask oneself this very important question: what are the qualifications of a disciple? So what are the answers to this very important question? The first question is that the disciple must be very inquisitive about spiritual life. Inquisitive means that you are very eager to want to know. Now, all of you at some time have been students. Some of you are probably now also students studying in college. Now, you will know that in any class of students, there are always some students who are very sincere, who are very eager to learn what the professor or the teacher is teaching. Normally, they will be on the front benches. And they study very sincerely whatever is taught in the class, and they will go home also and study from the books. There are some students also who are not very serious about understanding this knowledge. They are there in the classroom just because it is a rule. The college requires that we should attend so many classes every semester, so they are there. But they do not have so much eagerness to understand the knowledge. At the most, they may just want to somehow or other get the marks and then get a good job and go away. So also in spiritual life, we may have some candidates who are not very serious, who just come because of a casual curiosity, and then they will come and go away. Many people come like this to temples. So they have some kind of spiritual inclination, but they are not very eager to know spiritual subject matters. But the first condition for a disciple or an aspiring disciple is that he or she should become very eager, very inquisitive about the ultimate goal of life. One should not come to the temple of the Lord, one should not approach the Bhagavad Gita with inquisitiveness about how can I make more money, how can my business prosper, how can I find a good husband or wife in this world. This is not the kind of question with which one should approach God or come to temples or come to the Bhagavad Gita. One should be inquisitive about the ultimate goal of life. What is the human being meant to do? The human being is meant for a very high achievement, a spiritual achievement. Unfortunately, the human being has forgotten this. He has degraded himself. He has fallen down to such a low level. He thinks that the goal of life is to make money, is to enjoy the pleasures of this world, to become famous, to become powerful. And for this purpose, human beings do so many nasty things. They break the law. They commit so many injustices against other people. They do so many sinful activities for this, simply because they are unaware that human beings are meant for a higher goal in life. So that higher goal in life is very, very important. That is realizing God. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyasuhu Shreya Uttamam Shabdai Parichanishnatam Brahmanya Upashamashrayam. The meaning is, in the first half of this verse, the qualification of a disciple is mentioned. It is said, Tasmad. Tasmad means therefore. Since one has got a human form of life, one must be very inquisitive. One must understand and ask basic questions of life. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta. One must go to a guru and submissively inquire. Jigyasuhu. One must become inquisitive. The word jigyasa means inquiry. But what should one inquire about? Shreya uttamam. Uttamam means topmost. Shreya. Shreya means the ultimate goal. In life, there are two things. One is called prayas and the other is called shreyas. Prayas means the immediate goals or immediate pleasures in life. The other is shreyas, which means a long-term benefit. Let me illustrate this with a very simple example. Suppose there is a student. Tomorrow he has his exam. He is sitting there to study. But his friends come and say, come on, let us go to the cinema. So it is a very attractive proposal. He wants to go, very much wants to go. He wants to go with his friends to the hotel, eat and drink and make merry and then go to the cinema. His mind is attracted. So this is prayas. Here is promise of an immediate pleasure. But then the student uses his intelligence and he thinks, okay, I may get some immediate pleasure for today, but tomorrow I will fail my exam because I have not prepared. And when I fail my exam, I will lose 1 year. My whole career will be affected. My whole future will be affected. And in future, I will have to suffer a great deal because of these few moments of pleasure I have done today. So that long-term benefit that the student is thinking about is Shreyas. It is long-term. So the balance between prayas and Shreyas has to be done very carefully. Unfortunately, in this world, everybody is thinking about prayers only, how to enjoy material things in this world. Very few people are thinking about the highest shreyas, the highest spiritual goal of life. So it is explained in the Shastra that the aspiring disciple must be very, very inquisitive about spiritual truths and about the goal of life. The second qualification is that he must approach a guru and surrender to him. Here in this picture, we see a very famous scene. We have two great personalities here. One who is blue colored, who is standing, and the other is kneeling down before him. The person who is kneeling down is a great king called King Parikshit. King Parikshit was the son of Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu, as you all know, was the son of Arjuna. Arjuna and Subhadra. And Abhimanyu was only 16 years old when he was killed in the battle. You all know the story from the Mahabharata. And at that time, his wife Uttara was pregnant. And she was carrying within her this child, who later on became known as Parikshit. When the Pandavas retired to the forest, after their rule was over, King Yudhishthir, he placed Parikshit Maharaj on the throne and he left along with his brothers. So Parikshit Maharaj ruled the world very, very nicely. Unfortunately, at some point in time, he was cursed. Of course, the history of that curse is another wonderful story. Time does not permit us today to discuss that. And upon hearing this curse that he would be dying in 7 days, he immediately left his home and went to the banks of the Ganges. And there were many sages, rishis and munis who had assembled there. And he inquired from them about the goal of life. They were not able to satisfactorily answer him. At that time, a young lad came along who was only 16 years old. He was the son of Vyasadev, the compiler of all the Vedic scriptures. And his name was Shukadev. Although he was only a young boy, but he was totally spiritual, totally self-realized. He had attained perfection in self-realization. He was wandering around the world like an avadhut. Avadhut means one who does not care for any social norms, who is totally on the spiritual platform. And Shukadev Goswami happened to come to that spot by the Lord's arrangement. King Parikshit surrendered to him. You can see here, that person who was the king of the whole world, so wealthy, so powerful, so aristocratic, now here is kneeling down in front of a 16-year-old boy asking basic questions of life. His questions were, what is the duty of a man who is about to die? What should he hear about? What should he remember? What should he worship? What should he speak about? And then Shukadev Goswami gave wonderful answers to him, which form the great scripture Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavat Purana. So here we see an example of how one must approach a guru and surrender unto him. And having approached a guru, one must inquire submissively from him as Parikshit Maharaj did. And also at the same time, after inquiring, one must submissively hear. This is also very important. One must not simply just ask the questions in a challenging spirit. One must inquire submissively and hear very attentively. Therefore, it is explained in the scripture, in the Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidhi Panipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Jnanam Jnaninas Tattva Darshinaha. Lord Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, my dear Arjuna, if you really want to understand the spiritual knowledge, you must approach a guru. That guru must be a Tattva Darshinaha. That we will come to a little later. He said, Tadvidhi, if you want to know that, Pranipatena, you So it is very important that the disciple asks questions, but not in a challenging way to find the mistake in the speaker. One should not also ask absurd questions, challenging questions, but one should ask in a mood of submissiveness, in a mood of humility. I will tell you a small story in this regard. One time, one young man, he approached a sadhu. And he said, Sadhu Maharaj, I have many questions to ask you. So the sadhu was very happy. He said, yes, please ask these questions. So the young man asked the question, and each time the sadhu started answering, the young man would interrupt him and say, no, I don't think this is correct. I think this is the answer. The sadhu was very patiently trying to explain. And this conversation went on in this way for quite some time. Then the sadhu understood that this young man was not in a position to listen. So he said, all right, my dear friend, just wait. We have discussed enough. Let me give you some refreshments. So he went inside. He brought a glass. He also brought some very hot milk. And he started pouring this hot milk into the glass, which was in front of this young man. And as the milk started rising in the glass, it came to the top of the glass, but the sadhu continued to pour the milk into it. Finally, the young man, he put his hand on top of the glass and said, Stop. Don't you see that my glass is full? So the sadhu said, my dear son, that is exactly your problem. Your glass is full. When you come to ask spiritual questions, you should come with an empty glass. If you already think you know everything, then where is the question of you learning anything? Where is the question of you acquiring anything? So you may ask questions, certainly, because that is a process. The Shastra says that the process of understanding spiritual knowledge is Athatva Brahma Jigyasa. You must ask questions. But the questions must be asked not in a spirit that I know everything, but in a spirit that I know nothing. This is the important point. So therefore, the word sevaya is also very important. One must consider oneself in a very humble mood. One should not become proud when one goes to ask spiritual questions. And therefore, naturally, one must also have strong faith in the Guru and all those who give us spiritual understanding, because this ultimately is the path of our salvation. Therefore it is said, Yasya Deve Parabhaktir, Yasya Deve Tatha Guru, Tasya Te Kathita Hi Artha Prakashante Mahatmanaha. That if one wants to understand the real meaning of the scriptures, one must try to have faith not only in the scriptures, but also those who are teaching us the scriptures, that is the Guru. And lastly, the disciple must be a devotee of the Lord. It is only a devotee who can really understand. We have seen earlier the example of the bee licking the bottle of honey. So if one really wants to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita, one must follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, who was the original hearer, the original student of the Bhagavad Gita. And we have seen that Lord Krishna already declared Arjuna to be a devotee. So we must also become a devotee of the Lord. We must be a bhakta, then one can understand. So having understood what some of the qualifications for a disciple are, now we come to the all-important question of who is a guru.
So before we come to the subject, now we will take a short break. There is some small drink for you. You can refresh yourself. And then, please come back very soon onto your seat
and we will have the next session, the next half of this, after a small 5-minute break. Please follow a discipline. Please do not go for more than 5 minutes. Come back as soon as you take the drink. It is available here. Some devotees may also be coming here to offer you the drinks.